on the line I have James O'Sullivan. Hello, James.
Shane, how are you? Thanks for inviting me onto your show.
No problem, James. Absolutely fantastic. I suppose I originally came across you because I saw an interview you had with, you know, somebody that's not as big as me, Joe Duffy, like, but, you know, he's getting there, you know. So
Joe Duffy's old hat at this
stage. He's old hat, like us younger people now have to come up and take over the reins for someone like that, you know.
The old bull has to make room for the new books to come in.
That's it. And we won't talk about what's going on above RT at the moment anyhow, so we're happy out with somewhere like CRYA FM.
Look, the whole system is unravelling. You know, yeah. We have that discussion offline, you know, and it's, you know what, I've started a new band called The Awakening, and the logo is The Phoenix Rising.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like
a
plan.
A healing frequency band. I mentioned that.
Oh, you did, before. Yeah. We'll probably talk about a little bit about that in a minute, actually,
yeah.
Because I must say, all that stuff really interests me. And we have a fundraiser for the Cancer Support Centre coming up on Saturday, and we have breath work, and we have sound bat meditation and stuff like that happening. I'm big into that. So I suppose let's not get into the detail that Joe Duffy got in, but I suppose let's start a little bit with what happened to you. So you were kidnapped, Daniel, in your 18, 19 years of age?
No, I was actually older. I was finished college. I was
all
working
right.
In a company called Sun Life Financial. I was a computer programmer inside in Waterford City. And the cost of your first cars, you know, is crazy money when you're a young lad. And so I got a loan for a car and I had to cover the insurance. And so I went back working for the company, the local family business that got me through college.
Okay.
You know? And so I was pumping petrol and diesel and looking after the yard. And,
yeah.
And so it's just a double job, and that's what happened. I was 23.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. You were a fine age then. Like you were relatively healthy.
Lad.
Yeah. Fine strapping young man.
I was a strapping young lad, 6'1". The world was my oyster.
Yeah.
At the top of my game, I was very popular at the time, and used to have a great social life. And I was into sports as an athlete as well. And I played all sorts of sports.
Yeah.
As a teenager and the young lads, and you know everything was great at the time. You know.
So for what happened, and we'll explain a little bit more to the for what happened. You weren't like an easy target.
Well, I was an easy target as I was on my own.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
But I wasn't approached by one individual. There was actually five in the car.
All right.
And they actually cased the petrol station that day.
Didn't
I
know
saw
you were...
five men in a car.
Okay.
And I got a little bit of a fright, and I should have rang the guards, and I didn't.
Okay.
It was during the daytime, and the guy that actually kidnapped me was sitting in the passenger seat and staring at me with a very strange look, and I went, that's not normal.
Yeah.
And I got a warning, and I didn't heed the warning, unfortunately.
The universe was warning you, but you didn't see it.
I knew something wasn't right.
Yeah.
The way they were sitting just in the middle of the courtyard, and just sitting there, five of them. That's not normal behaviour. I never saw it before. And an older man would have straight away rang the guards, you know, or the boss.
Yes.
You know, but it just didn't for whatever reason, you know. And that led on to the more serious events that happened at 9:30 that night.
Yeah. So do you want to talk briefly about what exactly happened to you at 9:30 that night?
Yeah, I have no problem talking about it. It's
something
that I have to live with every day anyway. So it's just part of my past, you know.
Yeah.
I was locking up, and a criminal came from the back of the garage in between the walls of two buildings. One was the garage and the other was a house that was lettered out. And he was wearing a balaclava, and I was pulling down the shutters, getting ready to lock up the headlights on the shutters, and there's no external lights at the time, they're all switched off. And he took a gun in my face and told me to go back in.
Mm.
And that was the start of an ordeal that went on for over 7 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
And obviously he was looking for money, was it?
Well, yeah, they were looking for money and they're looking for kicks. You
right,
know,
okay.
I found that afterwards they're more or less the same age as me. One of the main assailants was anyway. I'm not going to mention any names.
Yeah.
There's no need. You know, they're from a very well estate, very well known estate in Waterford.
Right.
That'd be known for a high level of criminality.
Yeah.
And They had actual guns and they were going to use them, and you know, I got an awful fright and I just went, oh, this will be over hopefully very shortly. I'll just give them whatever they want, giving them money out of the till, and I said, where's the rest? And I said, it's in the floor safe that went in half an hour ago, so we'll open it up. I said, I have no access to it, obviously I don't have access, it's the floor safe. You know, well, you're going to have to get access to it. So I can't, unless you can actually get a JCB dig up the ground, you're not going to get access to that. You know, I've just been very practical about it, and that wasn't good enough, and they decided to kidnap me.
Right. So they bundled you into the car?
They made me drive the car. One sat in behind me, directly behind me, and the other fellow sat in beside me. No, actually, the two of them were behind me, and they said, you drive out the road as fast as you can, and I'd start driving, and they said, speed up. And the guy that was sitting behind me, which had the gun, he actually started to hit me over the back of the head with the gun.
While you were driving?
And then he knocked me out. And actually, there were sparks going off in my head. I was nearly unconscious. He hit me about three times, really hard.
Yeah.
And then I really started to panic then, because I realised this guy was not in control in any way, shape or form. And I was in serious trouble.
And I suppose people who are listening to this at the moment, this was in Tramore, this wasn't in Dublin City, no, or anything like that. This happened in Tramore, wasn't it?
This happened in sleepy Tramore, Tramore is like sleepy as it gets for like 6 months of the year.
Yeah. And what's this, about 20 years ago, is it?
23 years ago,
23 years ago, okay.
Yeah, half my lifetime ago.
Half a lifetime, you know. So even 23 years ago, you wouldn't expect to see something like that happening in somewhere Tramore or something like that. Again, that's something that you expect from Dublin or London or something like that, you know.
Yeah, it was recorded afterwards as the most violent crime in the history of the state.
Wow.
Yeah, because you wouldn't normally survive what I survived.
Right, okay. So you were driving out the road at 50 or 60 kilometres an hour, and your man was hitting you across the head with the back of the gun.
About 120 kilometres.
Oh, right, okay. And he was hitting you across the head with a gun. Was he trying to make you crash, or what was he trying to do to you?
He actually drew blood, he nearly knocked me unconscious. He was out of it on drugs and alcohol, and I found out afterwards that's what the case was.
Yeah, but at the time you were just scared, and you were just doing what you were being told to do, and then you had somebody hitting you on the back of the head with a gun,
Yeah, well, it all happened so fast. I mean, one minute I'm pulling down the shutters, next minute I'm bundled into a car and I'm told to drive.
Yeah.
That way. And it happened literally in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. So you didn't have time to think or anything like that.
Well, you do have time to think, but your logical brain kicks in. So, you know, it tells you that, okay, you're now in a situation you could die. So start making decisions very quickly. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And so the decision, it's fight, flight or freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And so I basically just froze because I knew I couldn't outrun a bullet, and I was pretty sure it was a real gun. I didn't look like the imitation to me. I found out later it actually was a real gun.
Right. And had bullets.
I would say so.
Yeah.
It was a serious criminal, had a lifelong reputation for robbing people and violent assaults. You know, it's a career criminal, these people don't mess about, so he had a particular mission, and his mission was to extract as much money as they could.
Right.
And so they made me drive out the countryside. I think it was a sugar loaf they brought me to. I'm not 100% sure if that's where it was, near Butlerstown in Waterford. It was a secluded spot anyway, where they could do whatever they wanted to me.
Right.
And they took off my shoes, took out the shoelaces and tied me up and put me in the boot of the car, and then proceeded to drive around County Waterford for the next 7 hours with me in the boot of the car.
And obviously you were rattling around in there.
Yeah, rattling around with
concussion.
There's hubcaps in the back and all sorts of stuff, and in total shock, and I didn't know what was going to happen. It wasn't too bad at that stage. It got very quickly a lot worse for me.
Right.
You know, I just assumed that they're just trying to scare me to try and get me to tell them where the keys were or something like that. And they asked me a number of times over the night, where are the keys? And I told them I didn't have the keys.
Yeah.
So they didn't believe me. And that's when it started to get really bad. And I actually had my golf clubs I used to play golf at the time were in the boot of the car. And they decided to start beating me with the golf clubs then.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that went on
for 7 hours.
For for hours and hours and hours, yeah. And it went on, and the beatings just went on and on and on, and it felt like you know, weeks of being beaten. Like, that's the only way to survive. You know, it just, time slows down so much when you go into a state of shock that, you know, you can remember the greatest detail, the smallest little thing. And so this was on and off, and they were beating me, and then they were
driving
all the way to the car, and then they drove off again, and they were driving around so much that they actually refilled the tank a second time and kept driving.
Wow.
That gave me an idea of how much joyriding they were doing.
Yeah.
Now, they were driving at breakneck speeds as fast as they could. My car was pretty nippy. It was a Ford Escort. It was a 1.2 litre Ford Escort, and it was fast. Like,
yeah.
Small car with power.
Yeah.
And by Christ, did they get the best of that car.
Wow.
And they actually crashed the car. I reversed into ditches and poles and all sorts of stuff, and me flying around the place. And at one stage, I actually came across a dog at the side of the road, stopped, saw a dog, picked it up and threw it in the boot of the car.
Okay. With the intention of the dog doing something to you that they should...
Stabbing me or something.
Yeah. But obviously
the dog ended up being terrified and shaking himself. I ended up comforting the dog in the boot of the car.
Right, okay.
The most bizarre part of that actual particular experience.
Yeah. So obviously they were caught at some stage, were they?
Yeah, what happened was that they had gone back to the garage and they broke open the cigarette machine to get more money because they needed money.
Yeah, yeah.
So they went back and got more, and then they went off again and spinning around again, and they're in and out of the estate they were living in,
mm-hmm.
and showing off to a group of girls that were there and bringing people for spins in the car, if you don't mind.
With you in the boot.
Yeah.
And the dog.
They had no care in the world. Yeah. Whatsoever about being caught, about who saw me or anything, completely out of control.
Mm.
Completely out of control. And so eventually, after 7 hours and of beating the life out of me and breaking my leg, actually broke my leg at one stage, that was so bad.
Yeah.
That they were driving back through the estate and the boot was flapping up and down, and it smashed up so bad. And they there happened to be a guarded car that was on a bomb scare, and the guard of the car gave chase, and they jumped out both doors and ran off. And they had no intention to leave me go at any stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Never had any intention of letting me go. So the guard of the car approached the Red Fiesta, and I at this stage had lost consciousness a number of times, and I had a near-death experience. I was actually dead for a while.
Right.
And I remember going into a kind of a void space and all the pain leaving my body and hearing a voice say, "You're not ready to go yet. You have much left to do."
Okay, very good.
And that was very true, because I'm actually a therapist, a healer myself and I'm an activist, and I do all sorts of different things. I'm a musician and songwriter. You know, I have lots of different strings to my bow.
Yeah.
And at the time, sure, I was just devastated. And I was just so happy that somebody had approached the boat and that I might survive this. And the band guard approached the boot, and I happened to wake up, and I said, "I'm in the boot of the car." And she opened the boot, and she screamed because I was lying in a pool of blood with a broken leg. And I'd lost 3 pints of blood.
Wow.
And so I was unconscious again. Then I woke up again. Then I was in an ambulance, and then I was unconscious again. I woke up again, and there was slashing doors, and there was a lot of panic, and they were rushing me through the doors of Waterford Regional Hospital. And I was gone again, and I woke up in the operating theatre, and I was gone again, I woke up again, and there was a lot of doctors around me, then I was gone again, I woke up again, and I snapped my tibia bone back into place with a crack, and I was gone again, I woke up again in the ICU.
Okay.
And so my parents were contacted, and they were told, "Look, your son's in a very bad condition, he was kidnapped from the place of work, and we don't know how much longer he's going to survive, he's certainly only got a couple of hours left." So the injuries were just so bad. And so they drove in, and then I managed to survive by the luck of God. I managed to survive. They had to cut the clothes off me and everything to work on me and keep me alive. And my head was the size of a bell, and my head was smashed to pieces. Like. So, yeah, it was a near-death experience, and it was huge news at the time. If any of your listeners are in their 40s or 50s would remember the event.
Yeah.
It was massive news. It was local news. It was national news. It was international news.
Yeah.
It was all over the papers for weeks on end. I ended up speaking on a number of different national radio shows, and Billy McCarthy, rest his soul, in Waterford on his show. And it was a big thing. And then the year later, when the Cork case came up, they did get Cox's DNA all over the car.
Yeah.
Never got a chance to burn the car out.
Yeah.
So they got caught, and one fella got 7 years, another fella got 4, another girl got a year suspended sentence, and, you know, justice wasn't done. There was some sort of justice, but it wasn't true justice. But
yes.
In my experience, there is no true justice in the criminal justice system in our country anyway. It's not set up that way.
And the fellow who got 7 is probably out now and all, and, you know.
Oh, he's out years.
He's
out years.
So this ordeal then obviously changed your life, wouldn't it? I mean, where you thought you were when you were, as you said, enjoying life and in college and stuff like that, and probably had in your mind what you were going to do in your life, and then suddenly this changed you, really, didn't it?
Well, it does. You can never go back to the person you were before. But I was a cocky little guy anyway. Do you know what I mean? So it knocked a certain amount of cockiness off me.
Right.
And I became a very spiritual young man, and I went down the spiritual road, and I started reading all spiritual books and Neil Donald Walsh and The Power of Now, and all these sorts of books, and I ended up writing a lot of music, recording an album.
Wow, okay.
You know, that the album got critical acclaim in the Irish Independent, and I ended up having music played on 2FM. And
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so you never thought the path of your life would be like that, like beforehand, like, you know?
No, I didn't. But I ended up being very lonely for a long period of time,
right,
because nobody could understand the trauma that I had experienced.
Yeah.
And I suffered with PTSD, and then I suffered that PTSD made me very wary of people and not trusting of people. And it affected any relationships with women that I had, and they couldn't understand the problems that I had.
And I suppose, you know, 23 years ago, mental health, I'm not saying mental health is great as it is, but I mean, mental health was nowhere near, like, there was no, you know, there was no psychotherapy, there was nothing like that back then, like, you know?
No, not at all. I mean, I had a great doctor in Tramore, and Dr. Collins, he's not a doctor anymore now, but I went to him initially, and I said to him, I don't want pills. Do not give me pills. I will not take them.
Yeah.
I know they're not going to heal me.
Yeah.
I will find other ways to heal me. I do need help, though. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah.
And so he sent me to the victim support group in Waterford, and I was just lucky. I got some very, very good help. Some very good therapists.
Good.
And they were great. They were specialists in trauma.
Right.
And the trauma that I had was so bad that when I came home from the hospital, I was in the hospital for 3 weeks, when I came back from the hospital, that I was literally having panic attacks every night for 2 weeks non-stop, like screaming at the top of my voice and reliving every minute of it.
Yeah.
And waking up the whole house.
Yeah.
So that's how bad I was.
Yeah.
And, you know, in later years when I became a therapist myself, you know, I went into the study of what trauma actually is. You know, it's literally a recording of events in real time in your unconscious, like the cloud. And that's where you have to go to release the trauma. You can't release it any other way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it has to.
You have to go into it. And you have to release it. You have to be very brave to do it.
You do. And, you know, I suppose you probably would have heard of Gabor Maté, and he's a big trauma therapist, like, you know, and he's written, what, 8-9 books now on trauma, like, you know. And
right, I haven't come across him. Must check him out.
You'd enjoy his book that I'm reading at the moment. It's actually really, really good. It's all on trauma. But he's written 8 or 9 books, and he's worldwide, like, and he talks about the effect of trauma has on our bodies and on our mental health, and you know, people, you know, who have trauma have so many things in their life, like, I mean, you know, they addiction, alcoholic, you know, and then the effect it has on your body as well, like, where, you know, cancers and stuff like that, like, that unresolved traumas can cause in yourself, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, so you went down the path, Anio, of getting help. And as you said, you went through stages of, you know, relationships that didn't work out because people didn't really understand you, friendships that didn't work out because people didn't understand what was going through for you. Like, so, as you said, there was probably, you know, 10, 12 years probably of loneliness and trying to figure things out, was there?
At least that, because, you know, when you're suffering with PTSD, you become disconnected from reality, basically. You end up living in a little cocoon, a world of your own.
Yeah.
you know, I wouldn't leave the house at the same time every day. I'd look left and right, and I'd change the times to leave. And it's all irrational behaviour.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have any control over it.
No.
You literally have no control over that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that's just a process that you have to go through. And for me, the best healing that I got was by specialised trauma therapists, and who are absolutely brilliant. And that was quite a few years afterwards, actually. Mm. I think that was about 5 years afterwards.
Right.
And I went to a shamanic healer in Wicklow, where my auntie organised a day where he came and he worked the shamanic work. I mean, did he put me in a trance, and I lumped my throat that wouldn't go away for 7 years. And after 7 years, he shifted it in one day.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. You know, yeah. I felt so much lighter and better. And then I started discovering the energy body and the chakras and all that sort of stuff and how
that's
all
get blocked.
How it's all connected. It's all energy based. Yeah.
So you became an energy based therapist then from that, didn't you?
Yeah, I went because I got such good results with the shamanic healer and the vibration therapy that he was doing. I went on to do Reiki 1, but I didn't think that Reiki was for me. So I later went and did a Rahani attunement. So I did two courses in that. Level 1 and level 2, and I'm now a teacher level of that. And that's a very powerful celestial based healing.
Right.
From the celestial center of the universe, the galaxy. And that's what I do, and work with the angels. So I've been doing that work for many years now. So that's actually a very difficult process, because it draws up all unresolved stuff for you to have to deal with. When you go through an attunement.
Yeah. And that is, well, it's still a work in progress, no matter what happens. As you said at the start of this, you know, it's something that you have to learn to live with for the rest of your life. You know, this happened to you, and it's very personal, and it's something that you have to learn to live with. But, you know, it has definitely taken you down on a completely different path to the path that you would have been going on, like, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can heal trauma, you know, you can heal it. There's a very good book that I recommend people buy. It's called The Healing Code, from a psychologist in America who became a professor in psychology. And he realized that even though that talk therapy is really good, it doesn't heal the source trauma.
Yeah.
And you can only heal that with energy, because energy created that.
Yeah.
So the trauma was created by an experience that you had that generated energy in your body, which is dysfunctional energy in your energy body and energy system. And so that has to be healed at the energetic level. So he developed something called the healing codes,
right,
which is in that book, which I highly recommend everyone do. And I do it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
That literally transformed me hugely by doing the healing codes every second day, every day for half an hour, different positions with your hands, and literally transferring energy back into your body from your own heart space.
Wow.
That's what you're doing with that. It's very, very powerful.
Yeah.
And he actually cured his own chronic illness by just using these healing codes himself.
Wow.
And that's where we're moving into. We're moving into 3, 6, and 9 energy, frequency, and vibration. Nikola Tesla talked about this 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That's where we're going.
Right. And that's primarily what you work with now, is energy healing, isn't it?
Everything I do is frequency based.
Yeah.
So the energy healing is the last thing I do, unless someone's very traumatized and they walk in the door.
Yeah.
Which I pick up straight away, because I get hit with that energy.
Yeah.
I'm very sensitive anyway, so I pick up on that. But I would normally work with people with just having a chat with them first, and I would do scanner therapy, which is a very powerful biofeedback machine, which is electromagnetic pulse device I have. I'm at that over 10 years now.
Right.
I have the latest machine, which is very powerful. And I also do hair sample testing. I have a diploma in nutrition, and I would do sound therapy with a sound bowl as well.
Yeah.
It all depends on, I normally do a combination of stuff. I do sound bowl, and I would do the scanner normally.
Yeah.
And I can get really very powerful quick results even in 2 or 3 sessions of people that have been carrying trauma for decades.
Wow.
Yeah.
Absolutely powerful. Like, you know, it's definitely another area to look at. And, you know, it's not a one-stop shop just to go for, you're dead right. Like, I mean, you know, therapy can cure so much stuff, but you know, it's there's more to it than that. Like, there is working into yours. So I just noticed that we're actually starting to run out of time. The show is nearly over. So okay. If someone wanted to contact you and find you to maybe get some help or something like around traumas, how can they find you, James?
Yeah, so I'm working from, I have my own clinic in the cottage here in Clare, in a beautiful spot in a walled garden with a cottage on the Arsenal Road. You can contact me 089-4288236.
Okay.
It's naturalhealingera@gmail.com.
Okay.
And my Facebook is naturalhealingera. So okay. There's three different ways you can get in contact.
Okay, that's
and I work with individuals, I work with families as well. I work with mother, daughter, you know, couples. I'm working on a therapist 10 years now.
Yeah. So absolutely a fantastic work, and hopefully I'll have you on again and we can maybe talk a little bit more about what the energy healing, and obviously talk about your band as well, which I didn't get around to talking about. So thank you so much for sharing that story, like, you know, powerful story, and something good came out of it in the end anyhow. So I'll see you later, James. Thanks very much for everything.
Shane, thanks very much for having me on the show. Delighted to speak to everyone that listens in.
Great.
And I'm here to help whoever needs me, okay?
Okay. Thanks very much. Thanks, James.
All
bye.
Right.
Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.